Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Yes. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Ben Olson's new favorite podcast in Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Cream Cheese Conrad alongside Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies and Mr. Hollywood Heath Pierce. Before we get to our always fun mailbag show answering your questions, I have to inform you that we have been nominated for the best podcast in the People's Choice Podcast Awards. So if you really, really, really like us, then please consider nominating us at podcastawards.com/app/signup and then toggle down to the sports category and find In Soccer We Trust. It doesn't take long and it really helps us all earn that all-important street cred. As they say, the link is in the description and the QR code is in the corner on the YouTubes. All right, boys. Charlie, Heath, great to see you. First and foremost, we're not in our normal spots. Charlie's at his own personal airport, apparently. And Heath, Charlie mentioned it looked like you are in the bathtub. It looks like you're in a bathroom right now. That's a nice shower curtain you have. Heath, you go first. Dude, thanks. Where are you right now?
Yeah. I'm actually in Monterey, California at a really, if you've ever been here, obviously, like 1800s is when people first started coming through. And there's still stuff that's inspired or stuck in the 1800s. So I've got this beautiful curtain behind me at the hotel I'm staying at. Not quite as nice as Charlie's Holiday Inn Express backdrop for the Continental Breakfast look, but it's not bad, you know? It's not bad. And I appreciate you guys pointing it out just so we can get it out of the way. Actually, it's on this side for those of you that are watching this bathtub shot that I'm going for.
Yeah, Christopher's saying Heath broadcasting from the toilet in the front of the shower is pretty amazing. if you're not enjoying this on YouTubes and you're listening to it on podcast form, make sure you go over to the YouTubes just to see the intro for a few minutes and check out our YouTube channel. Maybe hit like and subscribe.
By the way, Jimmy, by the way, I've chosen this as my backdrop, you can only imagine what the rest of this options were, because I did a full spin before setting up the shot, and this is literally the best one.
You said, let me do the toilet. It's fine.
Yeah, if it's the best shot I got, yeah.
And Chuck, you're kind of on the precipice of maybe leaving us because you are at the airport, not actually at a Holiday Inn Express. What? Is this your own private room at the airport? Like, what? Yeah, I've never even seen this before.
Yeah, we're it's a conference room in the airport, and we're off to Columbus. The Revs play the Crew, so we will be leaving in the next 20, 30 minutes, I'm guessing. So we'll play it by ear.
All right. Hey, okay.
Hey, Jimmy, real quick, if you want to hear a quick flex about Columbus, just to start the day, Columbus is one of the few airports when I played with Thierry Henry that he refused to stay the night in. The city. So no matter what time the game was, he always flew private back home after the game, even if it was late night of Columbus. Like, he'd go to other places, Kansas City, whatever, and stay the night. But for some reason, Columbus was the place that no matter what, he was flying out of at the same time in his little PJ, similar to Charlie.
You never asked why? You never asked, like, what's the specific reason?
No, because I was too busy trying to get the invite for the flight back so you could get back on the same day. I made it quite a few times, but I will say, you know, once you get the invite, ask questions, Charlie. You just
How many seats were on the private plane? Like, who are you fighting with to get on?
It depends where we were flying with Thierry. We flew an Airbus one time with him to London. That was like probably a 40 seater. Where I had a bedroom and a shower and two living rooms, and that was crazy. But generally the smaller ones, like, they were like you're kind of 2-2 in the front, a bench seat, and then a 4-seater in the back. So usually around like 8 to 10 seaters. So there was times that, you know, you get the bump from Juninho when he was shortly at the Red Bulls. You'd get a bump from Tim Cahill. Generally, me and Dax would get the invite if there was space, or if he thought we played bad, we didn't get the invite. So, but Columbus was the one that I distinctly remember. Without fail, every single time he was not staying in Columbus. But there was like Kansas City, no problem. But Columbus was like in and out.
You know what's funny is that my reaction is like, whoa, that's amazing. And Charlie's like, I already have like two of those points. He's just like trying to get the details.
Charlie, Charlie's like, I don't get it, guys. This is, it's called logic, you know? You want to get in, you want to get out, back to your family, you know? It's called traveling efficiently.
All right. So it's our special mailbag show. Let's get into some questions after our early flexes. And only me and Heath have flexed so far, so Charlie's got some catching up to do. This one's from Coach Scott Coppy, who says, Berhalter just recently mentioned that John Brooks needs to improve his fitness or how he fits into the U.S. men's national team game model, specifically defending in a high line. Does his new club seal his fate with the U.S. men's national team, Charlie? Improving his mobility, I think, will be difficult, so tactical awareness seems key. What are your thoughts on Greg Berhalter's thoughts? And actually, I want to add this in. Jurgen Klinsmann came out and said he feels sad for John Brooks because he's a great character, good professional, proved his qualities over so many years. At the end of the day, though, as a national team coach, you have your own ideas and you want to make it fit your own way. So Jurgen says he understands Greg. And he better understand Greg, because I'm still sad that he left off Landon Donovan back in 2014, you bastard. So get us back to John Brooks, though, Charlie. What are you saying with regard to John Brooks?
Find a way back
into the John Brooks. And is his next club that important? Or I actually think that Greg Berhalter's already made his decision on John Brooks.
He has.
I mean, Jimmy hates Jurgen Klinsmann. But yeah, go ahead,
well, that's clear.
He hates me, too. That's been documented, but that's a story for another time.
Okay.
But what I will say is, his mind has been made up. We know what he thinks of John Brooks. That's not changing. John Brooks is not changing as a player at this stage in his career. That's just not happening. However, if he goes to the right club and plays really well, no matter what style that club is playing, if there are injuries or uncertainties, he will be in the mix. Mm-hmm. But as far as right now, we know what Greg Berhalter thinks of him. He's not high on his ability to turn and run back and retreat if they are playing a high line. He just doesn't think he has that ability to excel in the way that Greg wants to play. That coaches make up their mind about a player, and we all know, we've been there. No matter what you do in training, no matter how you play in games, if a coach has made up their mind of how they see you, nothing's happening unless there's some injuries, something that's unforeseen that forces him to make that decision. So all John Brooks can do, which we know and we say this time in and time again, time out, is you got to focus on yourself and play your best and make decisions based on what's best for the rest of your career.
You know what I think John Brooks should do? Hold on. I think he should play number 9 and score 10 goals and get 10 assists. And then, you know what? We're going to have to take him. He's just going to be the big lug up top. The Brian McBride we always wanted to see once again. Heath, what are you saying with regard to the John Brooks situation?
I mean, it was actually, you know, passing it back to you on this, which was we've all seen John Brooks' weaknesses, right, in terms of playing a high line or the ability to just be isolated. He struggles in that situation. And I think our national team style of play requires – at a minimum, the center backs we currently have aren't great at passing. They're not great at playing out in the way that John Brooks has, but they have that recovery speed. They have that ability, that athleticism to be able to put out fires and spend decent amounts of time in one-on-one duels where they're leaving themselves exposed, knowing that they can make up for that recovery. But Jimmy, what I was getting at is you now as a coach, and Jimmy, you've done a lot of analyst work, Charlie, you as well. Sometimes you watch a game, you watch a player, and 2-3 touches, you can make up your mind, right? And I've tried to, when I do game calls and things, kind of constantly remind myself not to judge a player based on that, because then I create this bias over time where it's like, that player's not in good form. You see him miss their first two passes. You write him off for the game. So you go, okay, that's going to be a low performance. And you know how that is. And as a coach, it's really easy to create that bias over time. Not to say that he hasn't been properly evaluated, because I agree that John Anthony Brooks doesn't currently fit in the way that this national team has evolved into being. Had we gotten to the goals that we wanted to at a certain point where we play a certain style? Absolutely. But we never got to that point in our ability to play and be a strength with the ball in our back line. So just curious for you, Jimmy, you know, in terms of that bias, you know, in that coaching world that you're spending a lot of time in now, if you have to remind yourself, or if you catch yourself going sometimes that you've judged a player based on what he did the day before versus today, because maybe he has a bad pass, or you kind of write him off on two moments or a few moments.
No, that's a great question. And when I put my coaching hat on, you do have some themes that are reinforced. If that player doesn't maybe take the advice that you're giving him and applying it, it doesn't have to be applied right away that's going to be immediately successful. That would be ideal, of course. But there's that element of, am I at least seeing him try to implement what I'm asking him to do? Because it's for not only for him better for him individually, but also collectively for the team. And so if he continues to almost be stubborn and not add what I'm saying into it, or it's like, I know better than you do, then you're going to have a problem. And I don't know if that's what's happening with John Brooks. I don't want to speculate too much, but I think it's clear to chart what Charlie was saying before, that Greg's made up his mind. And as much as that Greg went on TV and said that he wants to see how he's going to play.
Political, very political.
I think it was just him trying to, okay, I'm going to answer this question without really answering it. That's a really safe way to respond. It still puts a little bit of the onus on the player, which we all know. I don't think it really matters how he plays, Charlie.
No, and I would also say for people that are saying, John Brooks, we need John Brooks, John Brooks. Think about how the U.S. plays with their outside backs. He's the left center back. Antti Robinson is always bombing forward, always.
Yeah, he'll be isolated.
John Brooks is going to have to get out to the touchline, to the sideline. We've seen what happens when he gets out to the sideline. One, he's not quick enough to do it. And two, once he does get there, he gets torched. Mm-hmm. And also, yes, he's good just distributing with his distribution when given time. Mm-hmm. But under the press, which I think will happen a bunch of times, especially against England, don't know so much about Wales and in Iran, but I'm sure at times we're all expecting Iran to just sit back and be super methodical. And I bet you they switch it up at times. I bet you they will bomb forward and press, because you gotta be unpredictable sometimes.
If you recognize a vulnerability in a team, and if John Brooks has a vulnerability that other teams can exploit, you're obviously, to your point, Charlie, you're going to try to make that happen. All right, a related question in the center back situation from Connor Knows Soccer. And if that's his username here on YouTube, we should probably be asking him the questions. He says, Heath, if John Brooks is not selected to the final World Cup roster, who would you like to see pair with Walker Zimmerman in the back? And I think it's, for me, I'll just go first, yet to be determined, because if Chris Richards is going to Crystal Palace and that's all done, is he going to get legitimate minutes? They had a center back pairing that's coming back this particular season. Aaron Long still trying to get, I think, back up to his peak form after a long-term injury with the Achilles. Mark McKenzie's still in the equation. I mean, we have a CCV. Carter Vickers is another guy that's, I think, on the fringes and still trying to punch his way into the team. Is there one guy that maybe stands out, or are you kind of on the, I want to wait for the next 5 months and see who's the sharpest going into the World Cup?
I mean, it's weirdly, Chris Richards has been the talk of everyone, right? Being that pairing. And I personally am not sold on Chris Richards yet, just because outside of his performances in the Bundesliga, which I think have been really strong at times, I haven't seen him really say, this is my spot on the national team. I've seen him be solid, but I've seen a whole group of center backs be solid when called upon in different circumstances. And so I would love for it to be him. That's going to require him to play games at Crystal Palace. If he doesn't play at Crystal Palace, I think he's a fringe selection for the World Cup if he goes the next 6 months without any games. And that means it's probably going back to an Aaron Long, which feels like a little bit of a, I don't want to say a problem, because I do feel comfortable with the two of them. But when you get to the World Cup and you're throwing different things and you're navigating a group stage, I would be shocked if you went three games with the same two starting back pair based on circumstances and what you're trying to build, or a style of play that you're trying to implement based on the opponent you're playing to navigate a group stage to get out of it, that I worry a little bit. You know, Mark McKenzie's obviously a chance to get back into his team this year. Cameron Carter-Vickers, Eric Palmer-Brown. But at this point, I guess it's Aaron Long until I see otherwise from somebody else. I don't know, Charlie, what's your take on this? Is there anybody that you think that could be different than that?
No. I mean, outside of the pool right now, I don't see a center back emerging as a starter. And Walker Zimmerman, I think his form has dipped quite a bit, actually, from his peak kind of mid to late World Cup qualifying stages. I think his form has dipped within Major League Soccer. So I know he's our best center back right now, considering he's been playing consistently, but he hasn't been playing as well as he was, you know, 4 or 5 months ago. So ultimately, I still feel like every position's up for grab in the next five months. I know Zimmerman is leading the candidacy right now for a starting position, but I'm not convinced with the set back four. I mean, in terms of the center back. So,
yeah,
it's one of those things where I think we have to wait. And I'm still high on the potential of a Mark McKenzie, because I saw what he could do in Major League Soccer and just the physical abilities that are you can't train. He has all of those. Mm-hmm. It's about the timing and the tactics. And we saw in the Nations League final against Mexico, those nerves, like he gave away some bad balls. He gave up the first goal to Tecatito. Those are those moments that you grow from, you learn from, and hopefully in these next 5 months with his club in Belgium, he can take that step forward, because I still believe in his ability and that he could potentially be one of those guys by the end of it. But it's our weakest, that and our striker position. Those are our two weaknesses.
Yeah.
Right now.
Just two very important parts of the field. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's fine.
Jimmy. Yeah. I mean, I think Mark McKenzie has been getting some looks at captain so far in the preseason. So they're trying to move on John Lukumi out of the club and move him on. There were some links with, I don't remember who the clubs were. So hopefully that means he's next in line to really establish himself, with some of the nods coming from the coach who actually has a background in working with younger players. Jimmy, for you on that, and I don't want us to like belabor this point, but I worry if it's not Walker Zimmerman, like I worry about another two person pairing with the lack of international experience they'll have going into a World Cup. If it's not him, even if his form's dipping, I still like, okay, if you take him out and you say, you know, Cameron Carter-Vickers and Chris Richards, that makes me pretty nervous in a World Cup. I mean, they've got a ton of potential. I like the upside of where they can be, but they're all still, you know, Cameron Carter-Vickers a little older, but like still green to me
everything makes you nervous at this point.
Well, a little bit, but I guess where I would jump in and say that there's, I think what I've liked from Cameron Carter-Vickers and what we saw with him with Celtic last season is that there's more of a steadiness to his game, right? He's going to give you something you can count on and depend on every single time you roll him out. He didn't necessarily have that. Maybe he wasn't getting the opportunities, got loaned out a lot, never really felt at home. So there's probably a whole bunch of elements, and we got to get him on the show to talk about it at some point. But I think Walker Zimmerman provides that. He's 28, going to be 29, I think, by the time the World Cup starts. He knows this is his last time to probably play in a World Cup. He probably won't be a part of the 2026 team. And I think that urgency, and I don't say desperation, but this is it. And you need to be good. This is going to be your one and only chance. I was in that same spot and tried to make the most of it, knowing that that was probably going to be the case. And so I see a lot of similarities in his kind of timeline as it was for mine. And as much as I worried about my club form, as long as you showed up and played well for the national team, I knew that I guess I'm just not worried about Walker. It's kind of how I'm seeing it. Despite, I agree with you that he's had a little bit of a dip in form. And I think it's weird that it coincides with him signing that big 4-year, $10 million deal. Anytime we see players make that type of big money, even, you know, it can be Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with Arsenal, whatever. There's always something, like, it's like the expectations of everybody from everybody to you changes, even though you're just going out there and doing the same exact thing you were doing before. But now everybody almost expects more.
Also, but you also take a little bit of a breath out, you know, when you sort of feel like you reached a milestone, and then you've got to reset your expectations, right? I think that's natural of any. It's like kind of natural to sort of feel like you've arrived, or that finally, like, the chip on your shoulder has been proven.
Right. Well, so here's one thing that was really interesting. It's not like for like, but I think there's some similarities to it regard with mentality. So I used to write for Sports Illustrated when I was a player. And then we made this big shift to ESPN, and I got paid a little bit. And so my agent at the time, I'm going to keep him nameless, but the people that were underneath him said, oh, now that you've got this and you're getting paid, you got to be funnier. And I was like, what does that even mean? Be funnier? Like, I'm just going to be me, you know? And it just felt, even in that thing where I'm making like $75 an article, I felt this immense
say
pressure.
His name.
I'm Richard Motzkin. Okay. And so I'm gonna how do you be funny?
You gotta be funnier.
I was gonna say the same thing, but like,
well, okay, you know what? I'm sad I shared that story. Let's pivot into the next question.
I wish you were
question.
A little bit funnier though. Seriously.
No, I'm sure you do. Yeah.
Does this story end funny or not? I mean, it's just skipping.
No, there is no end story. Look, all I'm saying
he's so irritated right now.
Just be funny, Jimmy. Why are you getting wound up?
I went from being not paid at all to making $75, and the pressure was be funnier. And I couldn't imagine, you know, making $300K a year to jumping to $2.5 million a year, and then what the expectations are there. Anyway, so here's a question from Dr. Lee Hancock, who I think Heath knows. I don't know if you know him, Charlie. Noted sports psychologist and friend of the stars, as he calls himself. He said, say there was a competition, a 2v2 competition with us three and Dr. Lee Hancock. who should be his teammate based on, this is what he says, our play, our ability, but also our mental fortitude and why. Who do you think would be his best pairing? And do you think me and him, I've seen him play, he's pretty solid, would beat the other two? Heath, you know him, so I'll let you go first. Who do you think would be his best partner in 2v2?
Ah, man.
Because you can't hide in 2v2. You got to play both ways in 2v2.
You cannot hide.
Are we playing small goals or are we playing
small goals? Like, yeah, small goals.
Okay.
Small goals.
So I guess you kind of can't hide. You just sit somebody back as a goalie.
that's why you can put him there and then you got to do a lot of the work.
I'm just going to pick me, you know, like Charlie's not going, you know, up and back on the pitch, you know, I think he needs, you know, Jimmy's going to be yelling at, you know, Dr. Lee Hancock's going to be looking at him going, I'm a doctor, get off my back, you know, Jimmy, I'm the happy medium between you guys. And so I'm picking myself, you know?
Okay. Charlie, who are you going with?
I'm not sure. I mean, have I met him before?
No, I don't know if you've met him or not. Listen, Charlie, I'm going to answer it for you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he should go with Heath Pierce. That way me and Charlie are on the same team and we're going to kick your guys' ass. Okay. That's the way it's going to go. All right. I just wanted to answer that question. That would be awesome. Me and Charlie versus Heath and Dr. Lee.
Jimmy just got himself a year full of free therapy for throwing out the shout out on the show. So, you know. It's all right, in another way because that $75 for being funny didn't work out.
Oh, yeah, now we can get to the root of the problem of why he's not funny.
Yeah, Jimmy, go deeper. You got to go deeper.
No, I need to be funnier. All right, this one is from Not Bread Alone 21 on Twitter. Thank you for the follow as well, ISWT Pod. If you're not following us, please do. Charlie, I come to you first on this. Would it be so bad if guys like Pulisic, McKennie, or Dest are third or fourth on the club depth chart? It saves them from overuse and risk of injury ahead of a World Cup, but they can't really keep their form in the same type of way. What are your thoughts on this question?
No. You want your players playing. You want them. I appreciate them taking the time to ask that question, but you want your players playing. At the end of the day, this is 5 months. And you want to be as sharp as you can be, as confident as you can be. And no one's going to be happy, sharp or confident, if they're the third, fourth option. Because by the time you get into World Cup camp, it goes from 0 to 1,000. Mm-hmm. And by the time the matches start, you're going to be gasping for air after 10 minutes because you haven't built yourself up for this type of competition. And forget about the weather. I mean, it's going to be super hot. These guys are going to be looking for water breaks, any type of break that you can get. And while players who haven't been playing for 5 months, and that's why it's so important to put yourself in the best club situation heading up to the World Cup so that you have sharpness, that you have form and fitness. Mm. And the confidence part is massive. If you're balling out with your club, then that's going to translate well with the national team. So I really hope that we're at a point come World Cup camp that all of our players, even the ones who aren't starting, the role players are playing consistently with their club because we know we're going to have to depend on them at some point.
Okay, here's another question then, kind of in the same vein. I'll throw this one to you, Heath, from Addy Joseph, our friend at CBS. Is there a case for Pulisic to start over Raheem Sterling, Mason Mount, Kai Havertz? And if not, should he accept a backup / rotation role or try to leave? What do you say to that? And then I'll follow up with my thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the answer to the question. It's like we just saw Pulisic as the number three winger at Chelsea, and no one was happy about it. Christian Pulisic's not happy about it. And even though he's still playing 30, 40 games in a year, which, you know, 10 years ago we would have been ecstatic about and built a statue of him somewhere around the U.S., it's not what we want or need for our young crop of players. And he's a player still very much in his development with still a long ways to go before reaching his max. And so I think he shouldn't settle into that. Now, being a rotational player, an actual rotational player, as opposed to a backup, I think is a subtle difference. And so if that's the case, he's going to get plenty of games. I think he'll be in great form going into a World Cup. But that's a lot harder because of the way Chelsea built that attacking lineup. And now that you add Sterling to that, it's becoming much more complicated to getting him onto the field. So I think he should try to leave. Whether he can or not is to be determined. But previous to that, I think he would have been fine. But for other players, it's not as easy. It wasn't a bunch of young players all around the same age being signed at a club like Chelsea has and rotating them because of lack of consistency, because of form, because of whatever. You know, that's not going to be the same for a Tyler Adams. That's not going to be the same for Weston McKennie in some of these situations. You're going to find, you might rotate occasionally, but yeah.
Could I add something? Because I'm seeing Christopher Walken, who is a regular here, and I appreciate you tuning in all the time. He said form is overrated. It's a hot take. And that, given some of the players that we have, regardless if they're playing or not, they will start. And to a point, yes, Christian Pulisic is going to be starting for us regardless if he's option one, option two, option three, option four at Chelsea. He will be playing. And it's the same thing as Landon Donovan in his prime, the same thing as Clint Dempsey in his prime. They will be playing for the U.S. men's national team and starting. Weston McKennie also in that bucket. But does that mean they're going to be good? Are they going to be in the best possible form and position and fitness to help this team win? No, not at all. I will say, outside of, let's say, the big five players in this team, if they're not playing, they will not start. That's the truth of it. If right. they aren't in form, if they're not playing, they will not play. So I think to a certain extent, guys are going to get, the leniency with Greg Berhalter.
So what I would want us to explore a little bit, I wanted your guys' thoughts and anybody else that's listening, watching. With regard to Pulisic, I wonder at this point in the transfer window where teams are starting to settle in to their identities, coaches are working on team shape, how they want to move as a group, all that type of stuff. That's what preseason is for, very important component of it. If Christian Witten moves somewhere else, whether it's within England, which I don't see happening with Chelsea, or maybe he goes to Spain, Italy, wherever he wants to go, would it benefit him at this point? I feel like he just needs to stick it out at Chelsea. He knows what's expected out of him. He's going to fight for minutes. And that alone, I think, will keep him at relatively sharp. Whether we like it or not, we want him to start and be the guy. It's probably not going to happen under Tuchel. That's already been proven. But if he left now and had to adopt a new system and have to – I don't know. I just don't know if that's in his benefit leading into a World Cup. Now, leading into – like, say he does it, stays at Chelsea. January transfer window, after the World Cup, dude, you're like, I'm out. I don't care if an American owns the team now. I don't give a shit about any of that. Like, I got to get out of here. I can't play for Tuchel anymore. But I think he's got to be a good soldier leading up to that, because I just don't know if leaving is going to solve that problem and actually make him any better. The grass might feel greener in this particular situation with him, but I actually think he should stay. Heath, what do you think about, like, as we kind of extrapolate what that would mean if he did leave?
Yeah, it's tough. Because circumstantially, there's only so many clubs that can pay the wage, that can pay the transfer, that can do the things. Maybe there's a loan deal somewhere out there for him. But we know Christian Pulisic needs to settle in. He needs to have a little bit of some sort of motivation. And I feel like he was motivated by being a teenager, breaking into a first team at Dortmund. And now he's in a situation where there's just a cycle of players that are high level and hasn't earned the trust or respect that we thought he had gotten under Tuchel at Dortmund. But it is, like you said, Jimmy, it's a tough situation to leave or transition from in the short window that he's going to have to find his form in a new place, in a new team, in a new system, that maybe it is better to stay for the short term. But I'd still be exploring those options for sure at this point. And if you're a Christian Pulisic, you don't really care that an American owns the club. It's not really going to get you anything. The club might get something out of that.
I think that's a handcuff in some ways, because yeah, they don't want to lose their most prized American asset. Charlie, what do you say?
Yeah, it is. I mean, at the end of the day, you have an American owner. You're not just letting your best American talent go. And Captain America on top of that. Also, he has proven that at times he's looked like the best attacking player Chelsea have. So you still have hope and faith that he will get there. The problem is they brought in Raheem Sterling. They have Mason Mount. He's not playing over those two. That's just they're England internationals. You're at Chelsea. You're not playing over them. So you have to hope that you get a good run of form. You're coming in as a substitute. There's rotation and you perform. And Thomas Tuchel goes, okay, yes, Christian has finally gotten over the hump. He stays injury free. But ultimately, it's a very difficult place to break in and be the number one starter day in and day out. So I think for Christian, it's control what you can control. And if you stay injury free and you're focused, you're going to shine. We all know we've seen him shine, and we just hope that the next 5 months he plays with that chip on his shoulder, which he usually does. And he just takes over at Chelsea and performs, and, coming into the World Cup, he's hot, he's confident. And then he holds the power.
Right. That's exactly right. And also what I've liked about Christian's game, even over the last 4 or 5 months, is he seems to have emerged as more of a leader. It felt like we were rushing to give him the captain's armband before he was ready for it. And it looked like he seems to be a little bit more ready for it, which is exciting as well when he takes on that type of responsibility, which when you wear the captain's armband, you have to think about more than yourself. And I think that's an important component as you become a leader. All right, we're going to take our first and only break of In Soccer We Trust. When we come back, we're going to continue to answer your questions, so keep them coming.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to In Soccer We Trust. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Charlie Davies and Heath Pierce. And in case you're not watching on YouTube, we have to let you know, if you're listening to this in podcast form, that you just missed a promo for the incredible Brianna Scurry documentary called The Only. It's streaming now on Paramount Plus. It is so good and so important, I think, for the development of the game in this country and how much influence she had and how much impact she had, especially for our stud female players that definitely look back at the 99ers and in God, just how important they were. They're like, they should all be on Mount Rushmore of women's soccer. And not only that, but how it trickled and made an impact on the men's side as well. I never want to lessen that. I think their impact just helped grow the game overall. And so an absolute legend. Make sure you stream that now on Paramount Plus. It's called The Only. Also, we got nominated for a best podcast and the People's Choice Podcast Awards. Vote for ISWT at podcastawards.com/app/sign-up and then toggle down to the best podcast category. Do sports, pick us, and then we will be very happy. All right, let's get back into the questions. I know Charlie's got to catch a private flight somewhere because that's what he does on the regular. If he's not on his yacht, of course. Heath is pinching one off.
He must be a guest on the private flight, Jimmy, because when you fly private, you fly when you want to fly, you know? So I'm wondering where he falls into the tier behind Josie, Robert Kraft, and a few others, you know?
Nice. Yeah, that's true. There's a lot of questions I have about Charlie, but we'll save that for another mailbag episode. Let's go to another question from one of our friends at CBS, Chuck Booth, who says, if you're given the ability to change or add one rule in the beautiful game, what would it be and why? Charlie, because this is another Chuck, I'll let you go first. Got anything? No? This is a tough one, right?
It is a tough one.
Charlie would want the whole world to get MLS assists, the hockey assists.
Yeah.
So Heath, I don't know if you have anything. I don't know if this rule's in effect yet, but if you can't score with a part of your body, like your arm or your hand, then I don't think that should be ruled offside if it's in a, you know, ahead of a defender or whatever it is. And I think they're looking to change that rule, but I think that rule is a joke that they actually scaled that back and it was okay once. And then they said, no, any part of your body's offside, you're offside. And I like, you can't score with your fingers or your hands or whatever. So why should that be in, you know? So that would be,
I'd say
that would be one rule.
I'd say like sharpening VAR. I know it's not one particular rule within VAR, but I just say, you know, it's so subjective. Once you have the letter of the law, but then there are moments where it's so subjective, where the VAR official can, you know, signal the referee to head to the monitor because they think it's a clear and obvious error. The referee goes to the monitor and goes, yeah, I see what you're saying, but no, still for me, I'm sticking with my call. What? You know, so it's not clear, you know.
This is the Jimmy Conrad put a player in the VAR booth, yeah, so they can actually be like, hey, that guy was taking a touch at the corner of the penalty area running towards the corner flag and he got tripped by the goalie. And now you just gave him the goal.
That yes, I sense. Think that's total crap. It doesn't make any sense. That was going to be one of my rule changes. I hate that rule. Listen, I remember getting called. It was against the New England Revolution in Boston at Gillette. And the guy was about to whip a cross in at the end line. And when I slid to block the cross, I was inside the box and it hit my hands and they called a penalty. But when I looked over my shoulder, there was no Revolution players in the box. So what the fuck? That they're not even going to score, dude. Like, that's not that. That shouldn't be a penalty. That should not be a penalty. Like, I think the situation should be brought into, like, okay, I'm the ref. I can see it's actually going to go to three Kansas City defenders before it would go to anybody close on the Revolution. How does that opportunity now turn into a free shot from 12 yards out is a joke to me. That's all.
Well, by the way, I did like the idea of what I think it's MLS Next Pro is doing, or maybe it's MLS Next. I'm not really sure, but like the removal of players for time as you start to look at the time wasting. And I know Jimmy wants to get rid of headers, and it's the exact opposite of our producer, Dez, who wants to say no more throw-ins, which is just going to increase the headers because every kick-in is a free kick. But I like the idea of like starting to eliminate some of the stoppages or penalizing some of the things that can really kill a flow. I know that we all know the gamesmanship and we're all looking at the 88th minute to figure out a way to kill the game off when you're ahead. But certain things like that, where if it's a player goes down and they have to come onto the field, they have to be removed for certain.
Yeah. I like that. I like that.
And then you have a little bit of a power play advantage.
Yeah. Charlie, anything to add to the rule changes? Seems like your hamster wheel is moving in your brain right now.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, I love where we are with the sport and I don't want to see it get like micromanaged. And then, you know, it was such a free flowing sport. I think we're at a good place right now. And I don't want to see more stops and, you know, prevent it from being what it's always been. It was just a free flowing creative game where, you know, I think one of the interesting things that I've heard as of late is controlling the clock. And, you know, stopping the clock for injuries or throw-ins, free kicks, similar to what we saw in college, back in the day. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that either. I mean, I feel like our system is pretty good. I think it'd be maybe there's a way to see, you know, every throw-in, every substitution, every goal, like there's a clock that you can see collected so you have a better sense of what the proper extra time should be. Given the situation. So if you see 6 minutes versus 10 minutes versus 2 minutes, you can say, how is that possible? Look at all the time that we've added up collectively. So other than that, I feel like we're pretty good.
Yeah. All right. I like those thoughts. There's a question here from Emily Frake, a longtime supporter of the show. She said, this was more regard to the Brianna Scurry promo that we ran. I would love to see us, me, you, and Heath, you give more love to the women's game on the podcast. And we love talking about the women, of course, but we also want to be respectful of our sister podcast on CBS called The Attacking Third, who do such a tremendous job covering it. We don't want to take any of the, you know, because I had a chance to potentially get Kristen Press on the show. And I'm like, if we got Kristen on our show, wouldn't Attacking Third be upset that we got, they should get that guest? So we try to defer all that to people that we think are much more knowledgeable about the women's game than us. Total, nothing but respect and into that. And the Euros have been fantastic. I love all the TV ratings and the support and enthusiasm. It just goes to show you that if the investment is there, people do care, actually. And if you let them know what's happening and when, they will show up and they will support. And and of course, the CONCACAF stuff was great. I love that the U.S. women got revenge against Canada after we lost in the semifinals of the Olympics. I think that was cathartic for us. I'm still on the fence about whether I like Flacco and Andonovsky as the coach. I feel like we're maybe not as aesthetically pleasing as we should be given the talent that we have on the field, Emily. But yeah, I'm gonna just probably leave it there because I like to listen to the attacking third to get my information as well.
Deferred it to the, and then did a women's soccer podcast for last 6 minutes.
I was giving one of my Charlie answers.
I don't do that.
You turn 180, 360.
Yeah, you do.
Answer that you just you went. No, we don't. We would never do that. But I love what Lori Lindsay is doing. And Brianna Scurry, if you haven't seen the podcast, the episode, what she does is.
Jimmy. Yeah, no, but I will say that
this is cream cheese at his finest.
Increasing of the bonuses for the World Cup for the women's side and all kinds of things coming in from the side for the U.S. women's national team. Also, the fact that they're launching their own store is pretty sick. I was talking to people that rep some of their licensing rights, and their biggest goal is to have more licensing rights than anything ever before. And that's just a great opportunity for the women to monetize the fact that they're the best in the game at what they do. Just a few other points that I think are really great momentums heading into the future.
Okay, let's now pivot into something, Charlie, with regard to these kind of random questions about how LAFC would do in the Premier League. How would the U.S. men's national team do in the Premier League? And they're so like crazy hypothetical. And with regard to LAFC, if the budgets could be the same, I guarantee LAFC would compete. If you're saying that LAFC, this current roster of LAFC and how they would do in next season's Premier League, with the budget restraints that they have to have in MLS competing against even teams like, I don't know, Brighton that are spending, you know, good amount of money or whatever, just threw them out there. I don't know how much they're spending, but it's definitely more than LAFC. These just feel like questions that are unanswerable in a lot of different ways. Charlie, you agree?
Yeah, they are unanswerable. I mean, it's two different leagues, and you're not just going to Brighton because you want to live in Brighton. You're going to Brighton because you're playing in the English Premier League versus LA, which is you got the glitz and the glamour. You're in the United States. You're part of a really cool, fast-growing league, and you know, it's two completely different scenarios. I think if you took away the salary cap, you're going to have a lot more players who are on the fringes of Europe, whether it's, you know, they're not going to make their national team. If Gareth Southgate came out and said, you know what, Jesse Lingard, no matter what you do, you're not going to make this World Cup squad. He's not taking a 1-year deal to Nottingham Forest. We all know And he's going to be in MLS. I think you would be able to get, It's a very attractive proposition for European players who have been kind of ruled out of the national team side. And that's really the only reason you'd play for a subpar team in the English Premier League or La Liga or Serie A, because you're trying to give yourself the best chance of making a World Cup roster. If that is out, then if Miami or LA or New York, some of those bigger cities that, you know, you can do so many different things outside of the sport of soccer, and your family would be really receptive to those moves, then you're going to be able to attract anybody, anyone. I think the league, though, has grown to the point where Columbus Crew, Sporting Kansas City, you know, even Salt Lake, they can bring players in. They big name players. If you give them an attractive salary that's competitive with LA FC and the Galaxy in New York, they're much more willing to come now to those other locations that aren't the big destinations in the United States. So I think that's where the league has grown quite a bit, is because the league's so much fun now and it's growing and there's a lot of talent, new soccer stadiums that players from all over the world are really looking into MLS.
No, and it helps when Minnesota United slapping Everton around 4-0. So we know Minnesota United, to Christopher Walken's point, wouldn't get relegated after that type of performance. Inter Miami after losing to Barcelona 6-0. Maybe we get relegated in that. All right, Heath, I got a question for you then. This one is, if you could teleport yourselves, this is from Jorge Castillo on Twitter. If you could teleport yourselves in your prime playing days onto today's U.S. men's national team roster, how do you think you would do? Because he says 22-year-old Charlie Davies makes this roster. And Charlie, 1,000%
makes this roster. I'm starting.
Are
you out of your mind?
Charlie is the roster. He is the roster. And you select Charlie, and then you bring Charlie in. You start building the rest of the roster from there.
Yes. We're basically feeding grapes to Charlie is what we'd be doing.
I would say we're all on this team. That's not even a question.
Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to the next one. Heath, you don't even need to answer that one.
Unless Johnny Bornstein just like absolutely.
Unless he was still involved.
Johnny Bornstein elbow to Heath's head.
That's true. All right, this one's from Ben.
New coach, new chance.
Answer this one then, Heath. At which point did you feel like you had made it as you realized you were going to be a professional soccer player and it would provide a legitimate living for you?
I mean, honestly, it was probably my first national team game. Hampden Park, you know, against Scotland. That was the first validator for me when I was playing at the club level. When I got to Nordsjælland in Denmark, you know, first game was okay. Second game, I won man of the match. Third game, I got subbed at halftime. You know, it was that wild ride of, it's just like the game, you know that completely. But the national team had a completely different magnitude where, you know, I'm sitting in the back of the bus the first day and I'm on the way to Murray Park where Rangers had just built a new training facility. And, you know, I've got DeMarcus Beasley next to me. We've got Claudio Reyna following us in his 7 Series BMW, which I had never seen before and I was impressed with. And I was just like wildly impressed. I was 20 years old and I was just over the top, like in awe of everything happening around me. And so that was the first validator of like going, oh, I went from being like, these guys are so far away to now me sitting next to them. And that was the first moment where I was like, okay, I can make some. I didn't feel like I had made it. I knew that this was just the beginning, but it felt like, okay, this actually could be a real thing for me.
Okay, Charlie, how about you? Somebody said in the chat, it's when you bought your first floral shirt.
Julius, shout out to Julius. I've always been about the floral shirts. I actually had it. What it brings up this great memory I had, my first trip to Vegas. So we go out with all the Olympic guys. So me, Sasha Kljestan, Benny Farber, Mo Adu, you know, Dax McCarty. So it's a big group of us. I think it's like 14 guys. And I thought, you know, I'm thinking I'm cool. I'm coming from Stockholm, got the style. I bring this like silver jacket and I have silver matching shoes and of course they're calling me a baked potato for the whole trip that I was just wrapped.
That's so good.
I would say the moment where I was like, yeah, it was going to South Africa in the Confederations Cup. You know, that was the time where, you know, you're playing and you're looking around and you got Clint and Landon and Timmy Howard and Bees and, you know, there's all the guys I had grown up looking up to, and I'm playing with them against the guys that I watched on TV. So David Villa, Fernando Torres, you know, Sergio Ramos, Casillas, you know, you look at Brazil and it was Kaká and Dani Alves. So I think that tournament for me was, oh my God, not only have I dreamed about this moment, but now I'm a part of it. And, and I know I have what it takes to be super successful at this level. So I think that was a really special moment.
No, that's a good story. I would say when I got named to the 2006 World Cup roster, it was just that validation for all the hard work and sacrifice and tears, all the stuff that nobody really sees. And it really validated that experience for me. So that felt like a personal, I made it. Like I did it. I proved everybody wrong. I got up there. I did not cry, but I felt like I was walking on clouds. I don't think I've ever matched that feeling in my whole life after getting named to the roster. It was such satisfaction derived from that was I can't even explain. I don't know if I can put it into words, the satisfaction that I got from this.
So compare that.
I make the roster.
I was going to say, compare that feeling to me to 2009 when we won in Honduras and we qualified for the 2010 World Cup and you're a part of it. And we got the champagne and everyone's going nuts. And like, how does that compare, those two moments?
Well, so I also was there when we qualified for 06, when we beat Mexico in Columbus. And what was interesting about that game was I knew that I'd be playing the next World Cup qualifier in Guatemala City. And I'm like, this is my opportunity. because if I want to make this team, this is going to be my one chance in a World Cup qualifier. Maybe not a meaningful game for us in the table, but it was for some players. I was next to Chad Marshall. You know, we're competing for who's going to be kind of that, those guys, you know, backing up Gooch and Eddie Pope and potentially Greg Berhalter. So there was all these, you know, there's a lot going into that. So you couldn't really settle on it and celebrate. 2009, I still felt like I wasn't one of Bob's guys. And so, yes, I obviously collectively was thrilled. Just being a part of that is so special and can be never taken away from you. But the elation was different. That felt more collective. Being named to the team was more of like an individual satisfaction that I got from that. I will say, though, and when I looked at this question initially, I was thinking about little bits and pieces that I learned along the way. It wasn't like that big, huge peak of my career moment. It was more like I got to play against Nwankwo Kanu, if you guys remember him. He played for Ajax in 95, 96, won the Champions League.
Are you out of your mind? You act like, no, Kanu
I get it, but there's some people that don't know who, I know, but a lot of people don't know who Nwankwo Kanu is, which is crazy. But when he was with Inter Milan, he left Ajax to go to Inter. He had a heart condition. And the best doctors in the world were at UCLA, where we were. And he'd come out and train with us in his rehab. That dude, I had never seen a player, he just would glide. He wasn't running. Even when he was full speed, it just looked so effortless. Yeah. And I, being around somebody of that quality, and I remember making a play once where I kind of got the best of him and he said something and looked at me a little bit different. And that, at that moment, I thought, I think I can hang with this guy. Maybe not for 90 minutes or whatever, but I'm not him, but I can be on the field and compete in some way against him. And that's kind of what I wanted to prove throughout my career was, as I got to each level, can I hang with everybody? There's no drop off when I get on the field. And so that was really important to me. And that was like a seed of maybe I'm a little bit better than I thought I was. And this gets back to me. I was, as Heath would say, I actually didn't get very good until I was 27 or 28, but there was, I kind of want to ask you guys that, 'cause we're talking kind of peaks, but was it like this little seed that you learned along the way? Oh, maybe you got to train with the Revolution or you got to train with the pro team and you're like, actually I can run with those guys. I can play with those guys and I'm not too far behind.
Well, you hit it the nail on the head in terms of with the Revolution. So I was playing at Boston College. It was a spring season game. It was after my sophomore season. So I had taken a tackle from behind first game of the year against Alejandro Bedoya's Farley Dickinson team. So before he transferred to BC, and this, we scored like 5 minutes in the game. I'm kind of like, you know, dance, and I know I felt that this was going to be my last season in college soccer, and then I played professionally. Next play, I check for the ball. This guy just comes in and cleans me out. I tear my meniscus, so I'm out for the season. Dude. 5 months. Crap. I had it sewn back together. And so I was depressed. You hear about knee injuries, and
yeah,
I just thought I'm never going to be as quick or fast, and you know, there goes my dream. So here we are, spring season. So about 6 months later, we're playing the Revolution. And this is the best Revolution team that we've probably seen. I mean, they had Shawry, Clint, Taylor Twoman, Noonan, I mean, Parkhurst, Ralston. You just had the team, right? They had always been MLS Cup finals. Yeah. So we're playing against them. And, you know, Jay Heaps is marking me. The ball crossed. And I do a bike and score against Matt Reese. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then in the second half, I got, you know, Parkhurst isolated 1v1. I beat him and shoot from like the top of the box and we score. And we win the game like 3-1. And at that moment, I was like, oh yeah, I'm good. I'm ready for Europe. Like I'm still on that path, that track. Right. So that was that moment for me.
It's so key, I think. And I think it's important that our younger players do get opportunities to play against seasoned veterans because they can see what it looks like. That's why they need to watch games. A lot of the young players I coach don't watch a lot. I'm like, you got to be a student of the game at all times. That's how you're going to improve on these little things, the fine margins. Heath, was there any of that though, where you had that seed of belief that kind of kept you? Because you need that. You need those little seeds to keep you going, pointing in the right direction.
I've got a weirdly similar story, not against a professional team, but I got into University of Portland. Nate Jaquo was there, who was being highly touted at the time to come out and be a top professional. Kelly Gray had just left to enter the professional ranks. You know, you had heard about Casey Keller and Steve Cherundolo, all who went to Portland. I got a chance to play under Clive Charles, and I remember the first week there. For those who don't know, just literally Google Clive Charles, and you'll see that he's sort of being tributed as one of the OGs of soccer in the U.S., but got to play a season under him. And I remember the first week just literally being like a guy named Miguel Guante, who was a right back. I had played mostly midfield or attacking my whole life. I'd just become a left back coming into college and feeling like, man, I'm way behind. The game was just spinning around me and I couldn't figure it out the first week. Ended up straining my hip flexor a week out, coming back, and then get into my first game, didn't start in my first college game, come in, coming back from injury, and I just light this guy up on the sideline. I, you know, kind of go inside to outside, I hit a banger to the back post, and then all of a sudden, it was just, everything changed for me, right? I went from this, I was in residency, but never really myself, to being like, okay, you know, John Ellinger and Clive Charles saying, hey, if you want to make it, you need to become a left fullback, to then being like, okay, I think I can do something here. And then it going from literally the first week where I was looking at Nate Jaquia and people around me going, I could never be as good as these guys. And this is college, right? I was like, I can't. The game's too fast. They're thinking too fast. They're just too, like, a step ahead. I was coming off of a broken leg as well, by the way, going into college. So it was just a thing for me where I was just like, I can't. This is too much. And then within like a week or two, I was like, I'm going to. It just switched, and then I never looked back. And that was the thing that I look back at as like a turning moment for me. And it was so subtle and such a small thing between being an average college player and then deciding like, I'm going to run with this and become a professional soccer player.
Yeah, that's awesome. These are all great stories. And I can't emphasize enough for all of our young listeners, or if you're coaching out there and you're listening, or if you have kids yourself, making sure that they get exposed to the game so they can see it, they can watch it, they can taste it, and then they have an opportunity to play against some seasoned veterans. It does make a difference. And I will add too that when I had the chance to, when I was 15, 16, I would start playing in the weekend league, Sunday leagues, right? And you toughen up in those areas too, that, okay, maybe they're not as athletically gifted, but some of them can absolutely ball out and they know how to move and the timing of their runs, and there's still a lot to gain there. So we could probably do a whole episode on development moving forward. All right, we got one more question, and I know we had a ton more. We're going to get to those. We're going to have a bonus content at some point to answer all these mailbag questions. We appreciate all your support as always. This one is from, well, his handle on Twitter is Straight Outta HP, and Heath's initials are HP. So it makes me think this is HP Heath Pierce's burner account. But he says, who gave Heath the nickname Hollywood? And also ditto for Charlie, who gave him the Chuck Wagon nickname? Heath, go first. Who gave you the Hollywood nickname?
I don't know. Was it you, Jimmy?
I feel like it was you, Jimmy.
I think it was me. I didn't know for sure, but I was like,
It was you. It was definitely you. And Chuck Wagon is you as well.
Yes. But we call you Chuck D.
I gave you Chuck D.
We called you Chuck D, but yeah. And for those that don't know, me and Charlie have a like inside joke about Ace Ventura: Pet Detective.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
Roger Predactor. You know what? I actually will say, when nature calls, I actually might like that a little bit better. There's so many funny scenes. I mean, it's one of the sequels that I thought was really strong. It's a strong sequel, and I wish he would have done a third, but he didn't. So
I'll tell you right now. Could you imagine my mom
talking about Ace Ventura?
my mom and my brother and my dad, they love the show. They watch every time, and we used to watch that movie like religiously, to the point where I know like every sentence, every word. And the Roger Predactor thing, that's why it was my code name for when we had to give fake names in Mexico City. Like, I was Roger Predactor. Like,
so good. It's so good. For those that know Ace Ventura, you're going to have a good laugh and good chuckle about that. All right, we're going to call it a show. Charlie's got to catch a flight. Heath Pierce has to wipe. He's clearly still on his toilet. I think he's going to get a hemorrhoid from sitting on it for so long.
Turn on the shower.
On behalf of producer Tess and producer Alex and Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies and Hollywood Heath Pierce, I'm Jimmy Crim Cheese Conrad saying thank you for listening and watching It's Soccer We Trust, and we will see you next week. Later.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.